in 2023, Italy's data protection agency actually had to step in and legally ban a Visa software.
Yeah.
And it was simply because the software was, well, too good at making humans fall in love with it.
Yeah, that was an app called Replica, right? Designed to be this AI companion.
Exactly.
And it wasn't just, you know, generating polite robotic responses. It was simulating empathy so effectively that users were literally forming these deep, profound emotional bonds with essentially a string of code.
Which is, I mean, it's essentially the plot of that sci-fi movie Her, but it's happening right now in reality.
Oh, absolutely.
The watchdog deemed it manipulative, specifically for teenagers or, you know, vulnerable people, because it could actively intervene in their moods. So it really makes you wonder, if an algorithm can make someone feel so seen and understood that they fall in love, what happens when a massive corporation points that exact same underlying technology at your wallet?
Yeah, that is the trillion-dollar question right there.
It really is.
And it's why we are looking so closely today at this massive evolution of artificial intelligence, going from a cold, logic-driven tool into an emotionally intelligent partner.
Welcome to today's Deep Dive. Mm-hmm. We have curated this specific exploration just for you, the listener, because you're likely watching this rapidly shifting landscape of AI and business and wondering where it's actually heading.
Right, because it is moving incredibly fast.
It is. And our mission today is to unpack the mechanics behind this shift. Mm-hmm. We are leaning heavily into the concepts from Robert Dew's empathic algorithm to figure out how businesses are moving away from that infuriating computer says no model.
Ugh, we all know that one.
Oh, yeah. And we're moving towards what we're calling next level customer experience, or CX.
To really grasp the magnitude of this shift, though, we have to look at the underlying architecture. We aren't talking about a slightly better flowchart or a faster search engine.
Right.
Going from the old rules-based customer service bots to modern large language models, LLMs, it's a generational leap. Think about the jump from a pager to a smartphone.
Or even like TNT compared to a nuclear reaction.
Spot on. The foundational mechanics have entirely changed. There was an investor quoted in the source text who literally called these new AIs freakishly good.
Okay, let's unpack this mechanism. Because for years, we had things like Eliza, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was a bot from all the way back in the 1960s that simulated a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
You type in, like, I'm sad, and it would just look for the word sad, run a basic pattern match, and spit back, why are you sad?
Right. It gave the illusion of a conversation.
Yeah, but there was zero actual comprehension happening behind the screen.
Exactly. Eliza was essentially a mirror just reflecting your syntax right back at you.
Yeah.
Modern LLMs, though, they operate on a fundamentally different premise, and it really hinges on a psychological concept called theory of mind.
Theory of mind.
Yeah. In human psychology, theory of mind is our ability to attribute mental states like beliefs, intense desires, or even ignorance to ourselves and to others.
So it's the realization that I have a perspective and you have a perspective, and they might not be the exact same thing.
Precisely. It is how you know that I don't possess the same information you do.
Right.
For decades, computers had zero theory of mind. They possessed a single objective reality, which was whatever data was currently in their system. But today's LLMs are actually beginning to emulate this ability. And we can actually test for it.
Yeah, there's a classic psychological puzzle used to test this, usually on children, actually. But it was given to ChatGPT-4.
Oh, the cat test.
Yes, the cat test.
Yeah.
Here is the setup. John puts a cat in a basket, and then John leaves the room.
Oh, okay.
While he is gone, Mark comes in, moves the cat from the basket to a box, and then he leaves.
Right.
John comes back. The question is, where does John think the cat is?
Now, if you ask a traditional logic program, it searches its database for the cat's current location.
Because it only knows objective reality.
Exactly. The objective reality is that the cat is in the box. So the old logic program just says, John looks in the box. It fails the test.
Completely fails.
Because it cannot separate its own objective database from John's subjective perspective.
But the LLM totally nailed it.
It did.
It identified that John thinks the cat is in the basket because that is where he left it. It knew Mark thinks it's in the box because he moved it.
It even reasoned that the cat knows it is in the box.
Yes. But crucially, it noted that the basket and the box don't think anything at all because they are inanimate objects.
Which is wild, because that requires tracking multiple conflicting realities simultaneously. The AI literally has to build an internal model of John's ignorance alongside Mark's knowledge.
I do want to push back on the word knowledge here, though. or even empathy.
Okay, fair.
Because it's so easy for us to anthropomorphize this stuff. But the AI doesn't actually have feelings.
No, of course not.
It isn't experiencing real empathy for John or the cat. It is a next word prediction engine, right? Just churning through massive amounts of language data to create a highly sophisticated story based on context clues.
Well, what's fascinating here is that you are hitting on a really crucial philosophical distinction. It absolutely is functional emulation. It's not genuine feeling.
Right.
But functionally, emulation is all we have access to anyway, even with other human beings.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
Okay, think about seeing someone sprinting down a train platform. You don't actually feel their stress, right?
No, I just see them running.
Exactly. You take in visual data, their speed, their facial expression, the closing doors of the train, and you rapidly construct a mental story. They are late. They are panicked.
Right.
Now imagine a police officer sprinting 10 yards behind them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Your mental story instantly updates based on new data. They aren't late. They are fleeing.
So we are constantly mentalizing to predict behavior.
Yes. We take in data and we simulate another person's internal state. LLMs are doing the exact same thing, just using billions of parameters of language data instead of visual cues.
That makes a lot of sense.
And because AI can now demonstrate this simulated theory of mind, it fundamentally breaks a very old, very stubborn economic mold.
Oh, the idea of Homo economicus.
That's the one. Homo economicus is this classic economic theory that assumes humans are perfectly rational actors. It assumes you will always act to maximize your own self-interest based on a cold, calculated cost-benefit analysis.
Which is hilarious. Because literally anyone who has ever bought a car they couldn't afford just because they like the color knows that humans are not perfectly rational actors.
Not even close. It is a terrible model of human behavior because it operates on a severely limited theory of mind. It completely ignores human emotions, social norms, cognitive biases.
And irrational desires.
Exactly. But for a long time, it was literally the only way we knew how to program software.
There's a really great illustration of this from the text involving the video game EVE Online.
Oh, yeah, the space sim.
Right. It's this massive multiplayer space simulation with a completely player-driven economy. And the game has non-player characters, or NPCs, that operate strictly on that Homo economicus model.
So they act completely rationally.
Yes. They buy low, they sell high, they maximize efficiency at all times.
And how do the actual human players view those perfectly rational NPCs?
They find them incredibly boring.
Right.
They are completely predictable. They lack any emotional nuance, ambition, or capacity for betrayal. And those are the very things that make the human players so fascinating to interact with.
Exactly. So when a company software only understands Homo economicus, it treats every single customer interaction as a cold transaction.
Like a boring NPC.
Exactly like that. But if an algorithm can emulate empathy, if it can understand that a customer isn't just trying to, say, move money from account A to account B, but might actually be panicked about a late mortgage payment, well, that changes the entire dynamic.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because that brings us right back to that replica app we started with. That same underlying emotional emulation that caused Italy to ban the app is exactly what businesses are now trying to harness.
Yep.
They want to move away from computer says no and forge these deep, personalized emotional connections at scale. But practically speaking, how do you actually engineer that? How does a bank or a retail brand operationalize empathy?
Well, there is a highly effective framework for this, CAPFUL, CAPFUL.
Okay.
It acts as a roadmap for the psychological needs a business must meet to build genuine loyalty. It stands for certainty, aspiration, prestige, fulfillment, uncommon, and love.
Okay, certainty makes sense. I want to know my package is going to arrive exactly when you say it will.
Right.
Aspiration, I guess I'm buying the expensive running shoes because I aspire to be the kind of person who runs marathons.
Exactly.
But how do these abstract psychological concepts translate into actual customer experience, or CX?
They map onto three distinct tiers of CX. Simple, satisfying, and surprising.
Let's anchor these because I think the real-world applications make this so much clearer. The foundational tier is simple CX. This is all about delivering certainty by just reducing friction. And the classic example from the source material here is Grammarly.
Right, because it just operates in the background. It doesn't just check your spelling. It actually analyzes the context to fix your tone and make your phrasing more concise.
It removes the friction from the act of writing.
Exactly, making the customer's effort feel seamless.
But Simple CX doesn't necessarily make you fall in love with a brand.
No.
It just stops you from hating them. To build real loyalty, you have to move up to satisfying CX.
Right.
This goes beyond removing friction. It actively helps customers achieve their goals by meeting needs like aspiration or fulfillment.
Think about a business like Studio Pilates, which was mentioned in the book.
Okay.
They could just run a generic transactional exercise class. You pay, you sweat, you leave. That's simple.
But instead, they customize the class based on your specific physical injuries.
Yes. And they don't stop there. They do follow-up calls after the class to check on your physical recovery and, crucially, your emotional well-being.
Oh, wow.
They are directly addressing the fulfillment and love aspects of the CIPFU framework. You feel cared for. It ceases to be a transaction and becomes an actual relationship.
Which is incredibly effective. But the absolute pinnacle of this framework is the third tier, surprising CX.
This is the Holy Grail.
This is where you target the uncommon need. You deliver unexpected delight that completely shatters the customer's expectations.
And the ultimate example of this is the Magic Castle Hotel in Los Angeles.
This place is fascinating to me. By all accounts, the hotel itself is pretty average, right?
Yeah, it's essentially a converted 1950s apartment complex. It doesn't have like spa treatments or infinity pools.
But by the main pool, mounted on a wall, is a red telephone.
Yes.
We call it the Popsicle Hotline. It is a brilliant piece of psychological engineering. It really is. You pick up this red phone, someone answers, you tell them what flavor you want, and minutes later, an employee wearing literal white gloves comes out and hands you a free Popsicle presented on a silver platter.
It's amazing.
Financially, it costs the hotel maybe 50 cents, but psychologically, it is an unforgettable, uncommon, surprising experience that generates massive brand loyalty and word of mouth.
It creates a core memory based entirely on an emotional spike. But, and here's the major friction point.
Right.
The Magic Castle Hotel can do that because they are a single boutique location. They can afford to have a human put on white gloves.
Right. An algorithm cannot physically hand me a popsicle.
No.
So if I am a massive multinational corporation, how on earth do I scale that kind of surprising CX?
Well, you apply Varian's law through artificial empathy.
Garand's Law.
Yeah, Hal Varian is a chief economist who observed this really fascinating historical trend. Basically, whatever is a luxury for the ultra-rich today will inevitably become a mass-market product tomorrow.
Okay.
And that transition is almost always driven by technology.
Give me an example of that in practice.
Look at a service like Trunk Club. It provides a highly personalized styling experience.
Oh, right.
You take a detailed quiz, and a professional human stylist curates a box of high-end clothing specifically tailored to your tastes, your fit, and your lifestyle.
It is a highly satisfying, often surprising experience.
Absolutely. But relying on human labor to do that complex mentalizing, understanding nuance, predicting what you might like, even if you didn't explicitly ask for it, it's incredibly expensive.
So it remains a luxury. Only a small percentage of people can afford a personal stylist.
Exactly. But this is where the LLM enters the picture. If we connect this to the bigger picture, if an empathic AI utilizing that simulated theory of mind can analyze your data, predict your preferences, and understand your style nuances just as well as a human stylist.
Then it can offer that exact same high-end, surprising curation to the mass market
Yes.
and do it at a fraction of a cent per interaction.
AI takes the white glove luxury experience, the deep personalization, the feeling of being intimately understood, and makes it accessible to a million people simultaneously.
Wow.
That is Varian's law supercharged by artificial empathy.
Okay, that sounds utopian for the consumer. I mean, who wouldn't want white glove, perfectly personalized service from every single brand they interact with?
Right, it sounds great.
But from a business perspective, trying to automate an entire multinational corporation with this level of empathetic AI seems like a recipe for bankruptcy.
Yeah, it's a huge undertaking.
And from a worker's perspective, hearing that an AI is going to scale the stylist's job to a million people is downright terrifying.
Both of those concerns highlight the fundamental economics of empathy. Let's tackle the business strategy first.
Okay.
You cannot, and honestly, you should not, try to AIify everything at once. This is where the Pareto principle becomes absolutely vital.
The classic 80-20 rule.
Exactly. Roughly 80% of your results come from 20% of your causes. Decades ago, IBM faced a massive engineering challenge. They were trying to optimize their operating system, which was bloated and slow. After analyzing user data, they realized that their customers were spending 80% of their time using just 20% of the software's features.
Wow. So the remaining 80% of the code was essentially deadweight taking up memory.
Basically, yeah. So they didn't try to optimize the whole thing. They completely rewrote the system to focus entirely on making that critical 20% blazing fast.
And it led to immense market dominance.
Huge. Now, apply that to customer experience. The ratio might fluctuate in marketing. It's sometimes 60-20 or 58-20, but the core strategy remains.
So a business shouldn't try to build an empathic AI for every single touch point.
No, that would be a waste. They have to surgically identify the 20% of the customer journey where emotional connection has the highest financial impact and deploy the AI right there.
So you optimize the pain points, you use the AI where the customer is most vulnerable or, you know, most likely to churn.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? That brings us to the elephant in the room.
The jobs question.
Yes. If we are surgically deploying this highly capable, empathetic AI across the most important parts of the economy, automating the very empathy that used to require a human being,
right,
aren't we just marching toward mass unemployment?
This raises an important question, and it is the most common fear associated with this technology. And it's a completely valid anxiety. But historically, the data tells a slightly different story about technological revolutions.
Let's hear it.
Go back a few centuries. Agriculture employed roughly 70% of the human population.
Right.
Then came the steam tractor, the combine harvester, the automation of physical labor. If you told a farmhand in the 1800s that machines would soon do 90% of the physical work, they would assume total economic collapse was imminent.
Well, it wasn't.
No. Yet today, agriculture employs single digits of the population in developed nations.
Because the economy didn't shrink. It just changed shape. Yeah. We invented entirely new industries.
Precisely. If you look at the last 30 years across the U.S., Australia, and the Eurozone, a period of massive digital automation unemployment rates have remained relatively stable.
Okay.
AI will absolutely eliminate certain tasks and roles. The generic customer service agent just reading from a script, that is obsolete.
Yeah.
But this shift necessitates entirely new categories of employment that focus on managing and directing this artificial empathy.
There are actually specific new roles emerging right now to handle this, according to the text. Trainers, for instance.
Yes.
These are human psychologists and data scientists who program and refine the AI's empathic responses, ensuring it actually understands nuance.
Which is critical work.
And then you have explainers.
A vital role. As AI models become more complex, their decision-making process becomes a black box. An explainer is a professional who acts as a bridge, interpreting the AI's complex, multivariable decisions for human stakeholders.
And sustainers.
Yeah.
These are essentially ethical watchdogs. They ensure the AI's outputs remain fair, transparent, and don't drift into the kind of manipulative territory that got replica banned in Italy.
Exactly. So we aren't facing the end of work. We are facing an evolution where humans manage the empathy engines rather than being the engines ourselves.
However, there is a massive caveat here. Businesses can still get this horribly, horribly wrong.
Oh, they definitely can.
If executives view AI solely through that outdated home economicist lens, if they see it purely as a tool for cheap cost cutting rather than a tool for customer experience, it will backfire spectacularly.
Oh, like the Commonwealth Bank of Australia example.
Yes, this is the ultimate cautionary tale of what happens when you deploy AI without empathy. A customer of this bank was trying to send several thousand dollars to Spain to pay for building materials.
Okay.
They sent the wire and the money just vanished into the ether. It didn't arrive.
Which is an incredibly high-stress situation. This is a moment where the customer requires absolute certainty and care.
Exactly. So the customer calls the bank. They wait on hold for 20 minutes, get nowhere, and hang up. They pivot to the bank's online chat interface.
And here we go.
And there they are confronted by a chatbot named Siba. Now, Siba had some basic natural language processing, but it lacked any real empathic capability. It had zero theory of mind.
It couldn't contextualize the sheer panic of missing thousands of dollars.
No. Siba was deployed strictly as a bouncer. Its entire directive was to guard the expensive human agents and save the bank money by deflecting tickets.
The worst.
It took this panicked customer 5 agonizing hours just to trick the bot into letting them speak to a human. And when they finally got through, the human couldn't even help because of internal corporate silos.
That is the anti-CX right there. It is the computer says no nightmare amplified by automation.
It really proves that true empathic AI shouldn't be a wall to keep customers out. It has to be a bridge to connect with them more deeply.
The transition from a purely transactional business model to an empathic business model is not some distant sci-fi concept anymore. It is actively unfolding right now. We have moved from the rigid illusions of Eliza to large language models that can actually map out human intentions.
We are abandoning the cold calculator of Homo economicus. And by understanding frameworks like KPOL and applying Varian's law, businesses are finally figuring out how to scale that feeling of white glove, surprising service to millions of people simultaneously.
And if they apply the Pareto principle correctly, targeting the most critical 20% of the customer journey, they can completely transform brand loyalty while the workforce adapts to govern these new systems.
So as you go about your week, you are going to start noticing this shift everywhere. You will see it in the way your banking app suddenly seems to anticipate your financial anxiety.
Right.
Or how your favorite retail brand somehow knows exactly what you need to feel fulfilled before you even search for it. The underlying intelligence of the software is becoming invisible, but the empathy it simulates is going to be incredibly palpable. It really is.
Which leaves you with a fairly profound final thought to ponder today. We are rapidly moving toward a reality where these empathic algorithms become perfectly tailored to our exact psychological profiles. A machine partner that never has a bad day, never loses its patience, and always knows exactly what to say to make you feel completely understood.
Yeah.
As these systems scale, will we eventually prefer the flawless customer service and perhaps even the daily company of machines over the flawed, unpredictable reality of interacting with other human beings? The next time you find yourself actually enjoying a seamless, perfectly intuitive interaction with a screen, ask yourself, is the machine becoming more human, or are we just relieved that it finally stops saying no?